Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
Back here on Metal Shop, it's 99.9 KISW, The Rock of Seattle. Right now we have two very special guests. Two-fifths of the band?
Two-fifths.
So it's, what, is that 20%? 20% of Demon Hunter is in studio.
Math is hard.
Ryan Clark and John Dunn of Demon Hunter. Welcome to the studio, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thank you so much for coming up, gentlemen.
You guys are the 20% of Demon Hunter that's still a Northwest band.
Yeah. When we first started, everyone lived in the Northwest. And then over the years, of people have come and gone. You know, we got a bunch of Nashville dogs now.
Yeah, once we added one Nashvillian, that just kind of snowballed into when that guy would leave or when that guy, when we needed someone else, that person was like the intermediary
it's
for
like
Nashville.
It's like a growth.
The Nashville just keeps growing on.
Nashville is awesome. You should come to my town.
Yeah, so first it was our drummer, and then when we needed a guitar player, the drummer was like, yeah, I know a guy in Nashville. It just kind of went from there.
Cool. Well, the reason you guys are up here, other than being total badasses and you're in the Northwest, is you guys released two albums, War and Peace, on Solid State Records. First off, congratulations.
Thank you.
Totally. Very, very cool. That's huge, man. Two albums in one day. There's like 20 songs altogether. What was the reason you guys wanted to come out with two albums?
Yeah, why a double release this time around?
Why not just one release with two discs, but two full totally different albums?
Yeah. Well, the idea of doing two albums that kind of like polarized the styles that we play has been something we've been talking about doing since probably like 2012.
Okay.
It wasn't the right time to do it then. I think there's kind of a right time to do it in a career. Like, you know, you don't want to do it too early. It's kind of an advantageous thing to do. And it just felt like the right time to do it. I've had a lot of help in the writing process with our guitar player, Patrick. He sends me like 30 demos every time we do a record. So just the sheer volume of stuff that he would be working on was a huge help in taking on like something this big.
Yeah.
And then after our last record, it felt right to kind of round out albums 9 and 10 at once.
Sure.
And so this felt like the time to do it. But really, like, the idea behind the doing two at once was basically to showcase our heavy side and our melodic side. And the reason I wanted to do them autonomously, essentially, was I think double albums are exhausting. I don't know if there's a double album that I've ever really like felt like I've soaked in.
Sure.
I think like most people, I look at double albums and go, you could have made one great album.
Well, especially this day and age, too.
Yeah.
When people are not necessarily oversaturated, but there's just so much music to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. So I wanted it to be like each one was kind of their own experience. And so we tried to kind of curate the track listing and everything to be like its own thing on both of them. And so my hope is that people can more easily digest them. I don't know if that'll be it's still a lot of songs, but
It's just more of a heads up of like, hey, you need to sit down and do a little, set aside some time.
Yeah.
Do some musical digestion.
Yeah. And it's a little bit of a, you know, for us, it's a little bit of an experiment to see, like, which one does better, like, which one people like more, you know. Okay. So there's a little bit of that. And, it's just, you know, User Illusion 1 and 2 were the kind of popular, the most popular version of, you know, album that came out on the same day. A lot of bands had planned to do that. I think
Opeth did it, too.
Opeth was a couple of months apart.
Oh, okay.
And Soilwork also did it with The Living Infinite a few years back.
All right.
But that was a double album.
Yes.
He's done his research.
But, like, Load and Reload were supposed to be out on the same day, and then Politics and stuff, you know. And so those ended up being spread out quite a bit. But Use Your Illusion is, like, the one that comes to mind that is, like, you know, they effectively did it on the same day.
And you guys are going to outsell it.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, that's already have, I'm sure.
That's easy.
Wow.
That's easy.
Yeah. Pre-orders through the roof.
There
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And they were smart. They did the first video they did was off of Use Your Illusion 2, because I think most people would look at the 2 and be like, well, I want the first. You know, that must,
like,
be B-sides or something.
Yeah, B-sides.
So I think whatever the first single was off of that, they did off of the second one, which really helped propel both albums at the same time.
Exactly, yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's a little tricky. Obviously, we can't expect, you know, the same amount of record sales for two records at once, and so we're being realistic about that, but, you know, who cares anyway? So.
At a certain point, you're kind of offering up, like, to your real fans. Like, yeah. you're offering that up to them as, like, I don't know. I'm not going to speak for you, not as a thank you, per se, but, like, hey, we had all these songs. We want you to hear them.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And it was, like I said, just biting off this much stuff, it really helped that, you know, there was a handful of records after my brother quit in 2008, because we used to write everything together.
Yeah.
There was a couple records where I was basically doing all the instrument songwriting as well as the vocals and melodies and stuff. And as of the last record, Outlive, Patrick had really started helping me out with the music stuff. And that was a great help, not only in terms of, like, just having the time to do it, because I was a new dad and stuff, but also I had written, like, you know, 100 and something songs for this band. And so I wouldn't say the well was dry, but it was like, it's a little bit harder to kind of feel invigorated. And sure. Patrick's like the youngest member of the band. He's by far the most talented member of the band. And so having,
oh, yeah?
trust me, we will all,
I'm just busting.
We will all gladly say that. And so he's kind of like the young, fresh blood that's, like, you know, bringing some of that.
And he's in Nashville, right?
He's in Nashville. Mm-hmm,
yep.
Okay. And so he's really helped us also just bring, like, a technicality that we were, like, not capable of in earlier records. And so things like that are just kind of helping us evolve and making us sound like we're, you know, not a bunch of old men trying to make it happen, you know? So he's been a huge help.
I don't think you're trying. I think you're making it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So you got these two albums in the studio. Were you thinking, like, was there an idea, like, we want these songs for this album? You wrote them for that album? Or did it just kind of come down to, how did you split it?
Right, because it's War and Peace also,
yeah.
Right?
So there was a lot. I mean, there was some songs that were just obvious. Like, you know, we're going to play Ash. That song was just clearly, it's a barn burner. It's going to go on War. There's a handful of songs that could feasibly go on either one.
Sure.
There's a song called Gray Matter on War that probably could have ended up on Peace. You know, it's a bit of a toss-up. It's not like War is all screaming and Peace is all singing.
It's got to be a little dynamic.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a little screaming on Peace. There's quite a bit of singing on War. And so it's more came down to, like, how it felt. And so, you know, again, I wanted that to be, like, the peaks and valleys of each record to be very apparent. And so I didn't want, like, a full barrage of heaviness on War and then, like, an acoustic record on Peace. I wanted to make sure there was, like, the same kind of peaks and valleys that we're used to doing on both records.
And you were saying these are 9 and 10, right?
Numbers 9 and 10, yeah.
That's
so
huge.
So this is the time, like you said, you guys have put in so much hard work and you've been out on the road. You've done a lot. Steve, you know, we'll talk about Steve Rock at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Got to.
Oh, yeah.
But this is an opportunity for you to kind of, like,
spread your
take
wings,
a deep
man.
Breath and do some flex. Yeah, on that kind of artistic,
I like that. Flex.
Creativity.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's cool.
Exactly.
Weird flex, but okay.
Hey, awesome. When we were talking to you guys before we cracked the mics over here, you guys both live, right, in the Northwest down there, in the area that Kevin and I both grew up in.
Yeah.
We were talking about all the Kent, Maple Valley local stuff. So there's someone right now hearing you going, oh, my God. These guys live.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, what's your social security number and your address?
Yeah, no, so I live up.
It's one of those things where some kid or some grown ass metalhead's going, man, like, okay, there's people in my neighborhood too.
Yeah, for sure. When I first moved to Maple Valley, I lived in Skyway for about a decade, but I ran into someone in QFC that was a fan.
Nice.
And he was just tripping that I was in Maple Valley.
Like, wait,
I was like, why are you? I was like, I live here.
Are you lost?
Yeah. Totally.
You guys play Maple Valley on tour?
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah.
So another thing about Kent is, I didn't even know this, that Howard Lees from Heart has a studio and lives there. So you guys worked with him and went to his home. And it looked beautiful. Tell us a little bit about the experience on this new album.
Howard Lees from Heart, you know, everyone knows Barracuda.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Well, yeah, if you're listening to KISW, you know who.
Yeah, and
Heart
you
is.
Better. Yeah. You better.
So, yeah, he I think was originally from Kent and went to high school in Kent and stuff like that. So he owns a house down there that he spends most of his time in Palm Springs.
Okay.
You know, Heart did okay in their day. You know, they sold a few albums, so he's got a couple places to go. But yeah, his house in Kent is like the oldest
house in Kent, and the guy,
literally,
yeah, and the guy who built that house named the city of Kent Kent, and he came from Kent, England, built an exact replica of his house in Kent,
put
England,
his flag in there, it's
and
like,
said
this is Kent.
This town is going to be called Kent. So there's a recording studio in there that you know, it's pretty like got to be friends of friends to get in there, sort of thing. Luckily, we have some friends. So we got in there, and the console that's in there is the one that Sir Mix-a-Lot did Big Butts on. So
if
you like the bass on the album, it's probably because of because of that board.
The butt thumping bass.
Yeah, I grew my big butt in Kent.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sweet old house, though, because it's got a ton of character. I mean, it's, you know, all the stonework and stuff. And he's decorated it with, like, swords and battle axes. And
you have to.
It's like
you can't
castle.
Just put some IKEA furniture in there.
No. It's
straight up medieval,
time appropriate, era appropriate,
but it's also like a time machine back to the 80s, not just from all the heart gold
cassettes
on the wall and stuff, but
the
also
proof of the pudding,
like, you know, you open some of the closet doors, not that we would do that, but if you were to open some of the closet doors and look around, you know, like the original cloaks that they'd wear that, you know, have heart on the back is just hanging in the closets.
So you get to see all the wardrobe stuff.
Play dress up.
Yeah, like all the wardrobe stuff. There's like crazy leopard print everything.
Uh-huh. It's got to be a hell of an environment to like absorb and then record an album.
It was great. It was a cool little, I mean, we just did drums there, so we were there for about 10 days.
You should talk about the tanning bed, though.
The tanning bed was the sweetest.
Oh no,
so
that
was,
you guys use it?
No.
wait till you hear about it, and then you're like,
All right. Down in the basement there's like this little concrete room, low ceilings, and it's just the only thing in there. It's just a room from Saw is what it looks like. And it's just the only thing in there is this 80s tanning bed that looks like in 5 minutes you're going to get cancer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's perfect. It's just and it's creepiest.
You
kind of
got it.
It has like a electric motor thing that, you know, the lift is on the ceiling and it like lifts up the cover and then you lay down in there.
Uh-huh. But it just looks so
straight
dangerous.
Straight up
80s. Gattaca.
Yeah, totally.
You're going to get your brain copied out of your head.
Brain scan. That's awesome. So
let's jump into the first song here and come back and talk, because I want to be able to give people an idea of where Demon Hunter is at right now with records 9 and 10. And again, dudes, congratulations.
Thank you.
On making it, first of all, that far. I know you put in a lot of hard work and like being able to make this happen in Kent, Washington.
All the places.
Super happy.
Bringing Kent back onto the map.
Yep.
It got erased for a minute there, but it's back.
Yeah.
So albums 9 and 10, War and Peace. We're going to play one from War right now. It's Ash. What do you guys want to say? You guys are DJs right now. You guys got to intro it. Yep.
Okay.
Wacky morning show.
Ash is the resident barn burner on this record. We like to do at least one of these kind of like, you know, thrashy numbers on every record.
Yep.
And so we got kind of towards the end of the session and realized that we still needed one. And so this was the last one to put on the record.
Got it. Throw some licks in there, man.
Yeah. So this is a fast one, and it fills that void. I know a lot of people kind of dig some of those previous songs from us that are like this. So, this one was fun, and it's just basically about possessions, how we can all be tied to our stuff, you know, and how it's all just going to burn.
Amen. All right, Demon Hunter in studio here on Metal Shop. This is Ash off the brand new record, War and Peace.
Not my precious stuff.
Well, populace.
What's up? It's Metal Shop back with Ash from Demon Hunter off their new record, War and Peace, a double disc release.
Double albums, not double disc. Two completely different albums.
And they brought up, and I just want to mention this right now, the artwork and like the physical copy of this reminds me of the, my parents have a Rolling Stones double disc live album that looks just like this. It's like, it doesn't have that old musty smell.
Right, like yeah, the mothballs. Yeah.
But man, this is so impressive, and you guys clearly put a lot of work and effort into this. Congratulations on the two new albums.
So that's not the version you're going to get at Best Buy. That's the ultimate edition. What do you call that?
Sell records.
That's the deluxe edition book. So we do the last, well, since Storm the Gates of Hell, which was our fourth record, we've done some sort of deluxe. So we've done everything from like a box kind of set to this is actually our second book. It's the most robust. We did a book for Extremist as well that was a little bit smaller.
Hey, robust? You could beat someone down with this.
Yeah, this is like a 12-inch 12-inch by 12-inch like 80-page book.
When we call it a coffee table book, we mean you could use it for a coffee table.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. We put some extra liner notes in there, some photos that aren't in anything else, alternate album covers. And so it's just a fun way to kind of like maximize everything that was kind of going down throughout the process and give, you know, the hardcore fans something to look forward to. So these are super limited. They go pretty quick. The last couple records, they've sold out like right around street date. They're gone, you know. So,
so if
yeah,
you
it's
want
fun
one,
to
awesome.
Do.
Grab one.
Oh, we
grab
got one. Woo!
No, we'll put the link up to Metal on the Metal Shop and the KISW Facebooks too. If you want to grab one before they're
there's a handful
right
left.
Now. Do it right now.
Yeah.
That's well. The thing is you guys said the song Ash was about all your earthly.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Possessions, how they could be gone in a second.
Yeah, except for
that. I would be surprised if this burnt. Like,
yeah,
I don't think, I think that this would be the last thing on earth.
Yeah, that's the cockroach of albums.
Exactly. One thing remains.
I'm going to use that later. Awesome. Later on.
So one thing I was interested in, and we have some questions we were spitballing here, and I was recently had Matt Carter from Emory up on Loud and Local, and he's doing a podcast called Labeled, and it's a history of Tooth and Nail Records, and one thing that came up in that and when I was talking with him is you guys have been on Solid State and Tooth and Nail since the beginning. 2002, you guys started 17 years now as a band. What's kind of kept that professional and working relationship so tight? Obviously, there's a lot of metal bands that go from albums
people
to albums,
around, yeah.
Sure,
different labels.
Yeah.
What's kept you guys on Solid State and Tooth and Nail?
So in 1995, I started a band called Focal Point, a hardcore band.
Yes.
And I lived in, at that time, I lived in Northern California, and we ended up playing a show with Overcome, who was a new sign on, at that time, Tooth and Nail. It was pre-Solid State. And Jason Stinson from Overcome called Brandon Ebel, who owns Tooth and Nail Records, and said, you got to sign this band Focal Point. So Brandon called me, asked for a demo or something at that point. I sent that to him. He signed us. We played a festival show that Tooth and Nail was doing a couple months after that, where we met him and, you know, figured out the plans for the first record, the only record. And so we went and recorded that record, and, you know, that band disbanded right after our first tour.
Okay.
Shortly after that, my brother started a band called Training for Utopia. They lost their singer. I ended up being the singer for them. That kind of snowballed into a deal with Solid State. By that time, they had started Solid State as like a subsidiary of Tooth and Nail.
The heavy stuff.
Exactly, yeah.
A lot of classic records on there, too.
Oh, yeah. But we put out a couple of full lengths and a couple of EPs and then disbanded right before the year 2000. My brother and I ended up moving up here to Seattle. So we had a lot, by that time, we had a lot of friends at Solid State.
Yeah.
We had a lot of friends at Tooth and Nail. And so we would, even when we lived in California, we would come up to Seattle and we'd play shows at like the Soul House or, you know, wherever in town. And every time we were there, we would just hang out at the label and,
cool.
and you know, chat with people. So we had a relationship with them. And then when we moved up here, we kind of started batting around the idea of doing another band, my brother and I. And it was just a shoe-in at that point. I think actually at that point I had started working for the label. So that's the biggest connection there is
So that's the Triforce right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You got the family connection.
Exactly. So we were in bands previously on the label, and then John and I were both working at the label at that time. My brother was working in the building. Our first guitar player, other than my brother, was Chris McCadden. He was working in the art department with me. And so I worked there for 13 years. And so just naturally, it's like, you know, of course
it
we're going to.
Was an in-house band.
Yeah. We had, I mean.
You play the company parties.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Christmas parties were great.
I mean, to get approval on artwork, you just have to walk down the, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're like, hey, is this cool?
Yeah.
All right, we're good.
It was. Yeah. It's a, there was a friendship there and like a kinship that like you, there's no way you'd be able to duplicate on some other label, and you know, like not knowing who's working your record and not knowing like what sort of things you're going to be able to do or what sort of things are going to be off limits or whatever, just never really felt
like.
All
right, it was
who's
my
work.
Boss? I need it. Just tell me who my boss is.
Someone.
I hear nightmares from bands about like you know, them not knowing anyone at the label or whatever, and so. It just made a lot of sense for us just to keep it in the family, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's made sense ever since.
And I love that. And like one of my favorite parts is just hearing stories from fans of Metal Shop about a Demon Hunter from when they were younger. And and you're still running it, man. Like the Northwest connection here is like incredibly vibrant and like vital. Like,
yeah, it's crazy
about, like,
when
Shakey's Pizza.
Totally.
You know, like all of that stuff.
Yeah, we'll have people, you know, we'll have 23-year-old kids coming up to us at shows and be like, yeah, my parents, you know, raised me on you. Yeah,
wow.
I used to listen to you when I was like
Does
six
that make
and seven.
You feel old?
Yeah.
Which is totally crazy.
I was conceived while listening to a Demon Hunter album.
Well,
I'm 16.
Yeah.
There are several fans who have kids named Hunter after the band.
Wow.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Damn, dude. That's kind of a hats off to the Northwest like metal scene. And, and I'm really glad you guys are here.
Thanks, man.
For one of those specific reasons. So, one thing I want to talk to you about, and I think that we need to address, is Mr. Steve Rock and Kevin Jacober from Metal Shop, the previous incarnations and the host. They just both had their birthdays this week.
Yes, happy birthday, Kevin. Happy birthday, Steve.
And I remember specifically, and we could go off for hours about like the connection between how Kevin and I took over Metal Shop from Kevin and Steve, but one of the first things that Steve Rock did, you guys invited him, or he just snuck onto your tour bus.
Yes.
And he was the merch slanger.
Yeah.
So KISW actually reunited Steve and I, because Steve and I went to high school together.
Cool.
Or junior high, whatever, and hadn't seen each other in 8 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And I still remember we were on tour, and we were doing an interview with Metal Shop.
That's right.
So some guy named Steve from KISW calls me, and we were in Ohio, and I was standing in front of a corn palace. They like build a palace on the corn every year. I was standing in front of that, and I take the phone call, and he's like, "Hey, it's Steve Rock here for an interview." And I'm like, oh, "Okay, cool, whatever." So talking
you
to Steve.
You sound familiar.
And I thought, and there was something like, man, I don't know. So then randomly ran into him at a Christmas party, like 6 months later, and I was like, "Oh, Steve, I remember you. And he's like, "I remember you." And I'm like, "What are you up to?" And he's like, "I work at KISW." And I was like, "Wait,
did I not just talk to you?"
Yeah, so it was like small world connection. And so it was great to see him again. And then we just asked him if he wanted to go on tour with us. Obviously, he's one of the best people anyone can ever want to know. And he is the lifeblood of touring.
Like, you always have to have one of those guys on the road that like can like
always
bring,
posy.
Yeah,
he's an
always
uplifter.
Positive.
He's an uplifter.
He makes everything shiny.
He goes to Burning Man, but I think he is the Burning Man. Like he is what is named after.
Oh yeah.
So.
Yeah. Without Steve, there'd be no party at Burning Man.
Exactly. Yeah. So do you guys have any good Steve stories?
Well, we can go for hours, but you know, one of my fondest things, Steve, no matter what city we'd roll up in, bus would get in, he'd be one of the first people awake, and he would grab his longboard, and he would leave at, you know, whatever, 8 a.m., and he would just leave.
He'd go on an adventure.
He would go on an adventure by himself on a longboard, and then he'd come back and report about the omelet that
Omelets.
He ate. And he would spend hours seeking out the best omelet in town and, like, talking to people on the road. Where's the best omelet?
So he was the scout.
Yeah, so he would come back and tell us about
the
omelet.
He was all about that omelet.
By the time anyone
That's
else
awesome.
Had woken up, he had already eaten
the
omelet.
But he was the best merch guy because he would have a jar of candy for the fans.
Yeah.
And he would give out candy. He would always have a backpack. He's like,
hey, Steve always, he's got a magic bag.
He's always got a, yeah.
He's always got backpack. Goodies.
Yeah. He's got goodies all the time.
Yeah, it's like Mary Poppins bag.
Uh-huh.
Like a twisted Mary Poppins.
But he was so awesome to, like, just the face-to-face, you know, that would happen between him and the fans, like, at the merch table was just unlike anything else. Like, you would want no one else selling your merch.
Hell yeah.
You know?
Dude, yes.
Be like, oh, we're out of, you know, small, medium, and large, and it's like a tiny person. He's like, but this, what you do is, you put, you know, like, so he could sell.
It this
could
certain
sell,
way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Where it is a dress, you know, you could, yeah. So he's just the best.
Steve's one of the kids. That guy needs to be the president of a PR company.
Yes.
Somewhere in there.
But he couldn't be, he would have to tell the truth, though, and he's not a spinster.
Yeah, that's no kidding.
That's a problem in that business. So you guys have been a band for 17 years now. We just talked about that. It's coming up on 2 decades.
Damn.
How'd you guys meet together in the beginning? Like, how did you two meet,
John
tell
and Ryan? Tell us the story.
Yeah, so that goes back to working at the label together. So yeah. I think Ryan started about 6 months before I started there. And so we worked together and, you know, I started doing A&R and Ryan would do graphic design for a lot of the artists that I was working with.
Hey, so what year was that?
That was 2002. Okay. One.
Yeah, I think I started
iPods have just come out.
That's like the advent of like internet era.
Yeah.
But it took a while for it to really start crushing the industry.
Yeah, things changed.
Yeah, there was a really golden era when we were first... You know, the first probably 5 or 6 years that we were there, I mean, physical sales were still crushing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that was a fun time to be part of a label before.
You're feeling
before
some success, man. Yeah. You can see it. You can feel it. It's
It was definitely more tangible
it's
at
in
that
the
point.
Paycheck.
Yeah, there was a lot of hit bands those first 5 6 years.
You know, obviously Under Oath was popping off. May,
Norma Jean,
Amberlynn,
Amory.
All of those bands I listen to. I have every one of those.
Yeah.
John, Emery was the first band that you signed as A&R.
That was the first band. Was
It wasn't a flop, and I'm sure that's how you kind of rose up in that
he
company.
He signed August Burns Red, too.
Yeah, oh, yes. Yeah. We have you to thank for all those awesome Christmas jams.
Yeah, I could tell you all sorts of fun stories about that. But
I'm sure you could.
Maybe
those
that'll
for
be for the next round.
Yeah, we'll wait for the Christmas episode when you're playing all the August Burns Red Christmas songs. I'll tell you the stories.
Dude.
Hey. So that said, I want to take you guys back to like when you were just little younglings.
Yes.
Just little youngins. One of our
little kids in Kent.
One of our favorite questions to ask, like, especially maybe you guys, maybe not. Incredible Universe was the precursor to the Super Mall back when I was a kid. The first song that got me into anything was Creeping Death live on 25 gigantic big screens. So what was one of the first songs, albums, shows that you saw that you just went like this, you know? You got the goosebumps and you went, I gotta be part of this. Like
your light bulb moment.
Yeah, what was your light bulb moment for like wanting to get into heavy music?
Man, do you know yours?
Mine
was a.
We're digging deep now.
Yeah, I mean, I know like just the general, like what generally was happening. And for me, it was more of a segue from punk. So.
Okay.
Yep.
I had a neighbor. I was big into skateboarding, and obviously skateboarding's back then especially was more synonymous with punk rock and stuff like that. So I had a neighbor friend who was 1 year older and was super into, you know, pop punk and all the fat stuff and all the Epitaph stuff. And he showed me Pennywise, Bad Religion. And then from watching all the skate and snow videos, like you would find out about all kinds of bands. So from there it was like, you know, No Use for a Name, Rocket from the Crypt, like all these really cool like niche bands.
Yeah,
Face to Face was a huge one for me. Nice.
Still strung out for you?
Yeah. Love
it. Strung out tattoo.
Oh yeah, So all those punk bands segued into hardcore bands like the Victory Era stuff.
Yeah.
So it'd be Earth Crisis, Snapcase, Strife, all that.
It goes a little heavier.
And then like simultaneously while all that was happening, like obviously Headbangers Ball was showing like Metallica and Pantera and Danzig and stuff like that. And so there was all that. And then I was slowly getting more interested in playing guitar. I had a friend who had an uncle who showed me Zeppelin IV and who showed me Sabbath Paranoid.
It's always the uncle.
Yes, it's always the uncle or the cousin. Yeah. And then So I started playing guitar. My friend started learning how to play bass, and my neighbor started learning how to play drums, all with the intent to soon we were going to start a band. You know, we just wanted to learn as fast as we could so we could start a band. Shortly after that, my neighbor, the drummer, Robert from Focal Point, his cousin, offloaded all of her death metal album collection to us because she got out of it and she was more into like classical music or something. So
wow,
she gave us what like 200 CDs that was like Autopsy, Morbid Angel, Deicide, Sepultura, like so anything in that in that world that you could like unleashed. So all the black and death metal stuff, just literally like 200 discs. And so we just sat there for years listening to this stuff.
I mean, before
the shirts.
So
many shirts. Yeah, so I had like
instant metalhead.
Deicide Legion shirts.
You came apart.
Oh my gosh. Dude. We had the best collection.
Now we, honestly, like we have music in the palm of our hands. We can like get anything we wanted. But like seriously, back in that time, getting like 5 CDs was blowing your mind. That would make your month. Yeah. Getting 200 at once.
Yeah.
That must have been just like, where do I start? This
was just
amazing.
It was a crash course in metal. Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh my God.
And you probably didn't know much about these bands. You just delve straight deep into
Yeah, you know, we were just like sucked in by the artwork and stuff, and then just like, you know, the ones that stuck to me were like the Sepulturas and the Fear Factories and
kind of groovier.
The groovier stuff was kind of, I liked some of the death stuff and, you know, some of the black stuff, but the stuff that really resonated with me the most was the groovier stuff.
Sure.
Even kind of like 90s era Obituary. When Obituary and Napalm were doing slower stuff like Inside the Torn Apart and World Demise and stuff, which I feel like I can effectively point back to Korn for those, even for the Napalms and the World Demise records. I feel like Korn had such a crazy impact on heavy music when they came out.
Okay.
I could go for hours on this, and I swear I could convince most people.
All right, 7:45, we're on at 10.
All right, we got a couple hours.
That's a conversation I'd really sincerely like to have.
So that first Korn record comes out, you listen to like even like Reroute to Remain, like In Flames or something that came out like, you know, shortly after like Sepultura Roots came out.
Because like 2000.
You listen to Roots post Korn, and everyone's going 7-string. Everyone's detuning to B or whatever. Everyone's throwing like 808 bass hits in their songs. All of a sudden, we're just into it. The breakdowns are happening more frequently, you know, like stuff like that. And then you see it trickle down even into the fringe of like these heavier bands. Like they start slowing down, they start grooving a little more. Anyway, that's my short version of
how
Korn kind of...
That's a shout-out to the kids who are hearing this right now, who are like 13, 14, be like, hey, you got to go sit back and do a little homework, man.
We're going to start a new podcast, Metal Shop TED Talk.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the first Ryan Clark on Korn influencing all of metal from the album.
Man, I'm telling you, in the
TED
late
Talk,
90s,
Ryan Clark.
In the late 90s, that's what I stand by. I think Korn did it.
So that being said, like as products and like this is like such a weird like generational thing for you guys and for us as people who lived with music in the physical dominant era where it was like CDs, tapes, literally cassette tapes. Yeah. Kevin's got a crazy cassette tape collection. Mm-hmm. Into the world of like the internet and so on. We lived in such a strange like little like window of time where like things change so fast. What would be, and feel free to take a second to think about it, what would be a piece of advice that you would give to somebody who's young now, maybe 16 to 25, honestly, at this point? What's a piece of advice that you'd give somebody who's trying to start a band that, like, can...
That's easy. You think that? I was going to say that's one of the hardest questions.
I was going to say that's one of the easiest.
Really?
Oh, really?
So I'll say why I think it's a hard question, and then John can answer why he thinks it's easy.
Yeah, and follow whatever I say.
So I think, based on my experience, every band that I've started, at least for the most part, has been, you know, we started when things were still physical music, and when things were still like when bands were still kind of. Now you'll see you'll be able to go to a show with 1,500 other people for a band who's sold like 7,000 records.
Exactly.
And that kind of the way to quantify how large a band is nowadays is completely different than what it used to be. You used to be able to look at SoundScan and go, okay, this band's the headliner, this band's second of four, whatever. Now, like, there could be a band who's sold less than another band that's way bigger live or has a way bigger social media presence or whatever. So all those sorts of, like, quantifiable things are off the table. Mm-hmm. There's a whole new system on how to gauge, like, who is, you know, more popular and things like that. So the reason it's hard for me is that new world of things just kind of happened to us. We didn't learn how to navigate it.
You had to adapt.
Right. We adapted, whereas other bands now, they're like born into it.
Right.
So if you're being born into this system pre or you know, post digital music where you're not selling physical copies, we really had the benefit of generating a pretty hardcore fan base when it was still that world, you know, pre-digital. And so our fans appreciate physical products. Our fans appreciate, you know, and merchandise
amazing,
and stuff like
this,
that.
Yes, this thing that we're literally holding in our hands that you brought up.
Yeah, and that's important for us to do, and it's still important to a lot of our fans. And I don't think it's as important to the newer generation. So to me, it's a really hard question.
We're just talking about advice for someone wanting to start a band.
Well,
sure.
Yeah.
Get popping, get rolling.
Some attention, yeah. Maybe so, some...
Get lit on Instagram, yo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the reason why I think it would be pretty easy if you go to draw from the right well is, I'm going to sound real old man here, mm-hmm. but a lot of modern music is very derivative of one another, right? They're kind of pulling from the same influences and the same styles and like... A lot of that stuff just starts blending together, and
because the bands who's successful,
yeah,
it's a
right.
Equation
where you know, I think if you go back and start pulling references from 20 years ago rather than 2 years ago,
okay,
people will be like, "Whoa, this is different."
And it's like, true.
Yeah,
that's
it's
true.
Not different.
Just
this
recycle
is...
different stuff,
right? Yeah,
I mean, you're talking about bands like Power Trip who kind of did that too. Like,
yeah,
sure. Yeah, I mean, like there's I mean, I see where you're going with that.
Yeah.
I think that's One of the pieces that I will tell people that'll ask us, like on our fan club or whatever, is not to follow trends. And I think we've done an okay job of not really following like the way that heavy metal was going. Most of my influences are 90s influences, and they always have been. And so when I'm writing a record in 2018, I'm still kind of like listening to Machine Head and like, you know, old Machine Head and listening to like Sepultura, Chaos AD and stuff. Like, I'm not listening to whatever the new cool thing is. Like, there's a handful of newer bands that I dig. Like, I like Gojira. I like a handful right. of bands. But I'm not really pulling from the well of whatever's happening now. And I think that's helps sustain us a little bit. So that's definitely something. Yeah, like, mm-hmm. you know, not drawing inspiration from, like, your favorite band from last year,
right.
for sure. And that's true. I think being derivative used to be a little bit more taboo, whereas then it just became kind of the norm. And people, like kids, stopped caring so much about the fact that this band sounded a lot like this other band. That used to be kind of like a no-no, I think. And
right.
I think it's slowly become kind of a normal thing to just kind of, now this is like a subset of whatever.
That's just how
Gent
it, yeah.
or whatever. And it's just, yeah, I think it's less of a concern for fans for all their favorite bands to kind of sound the same.
Because there's so many bands out there now
right. mm-hmm.
that you can be a fan of Gojira and not be a fan of any other, like, progressive metal. Like, mm-hmm. you can
totally.
Just know about that band and not, like... It's so hard to, like, try and wrap your mind around. But that said, like, is there one band that you, like, you swear by that you will never, like, not rip off? Rip off is such a, like, a... I feel like that's what you're trying
Take
to say. Like,
influence
you don't want
to
rip
yeah.
off a band.
No, sure. That's...
It's easier now to, like... take influence from a band or two and not know anything about the history
yeah.
of that band's lineage.
Yeah. I would say for me, I mean, it's been said about us, so it's not like any secret really, but when I like to pull from like the new wave of Swedish death metal stuff. So it'd be like Clayman era In Flames or a lot of the Soilwork records that were happening at the time. And so that, I mean, people draw that distinction all the time.
And there are
sure.
kids that are born now after no that idea. Record even
of
came
course,
out.
Of course, yeah. But that's that stuff, like if Patrick sends me a demo, for instance, and I'm trying to come up with a melody, I think Speed is one of those guys that I will go to all the time, just in my head, thinking like, what would Speed do here? Like, so if I'm going to kind of, quote unquote, Yeah. If I'm going to kind of rip someone off, it would probably be Speed. And I would just kind of think, like, what type of melody would he do here? And then I'll try to start with that and then make it my own.
Cool.
One of the last things that I want to talk to you guys about just briefly, and I want really, really desperately want to put this online, like, KISW last year for Pain in the Grass picked up Slayer, Anthrax, Lamb of God tour. And there are a lot of things going on. Like, I just saw a statistic today about literal numbers and statistics on Spotify about so many, like, of the metal bands that are getting so many more plays that people are, like, respecting and, like, the most loyal music listeners on earth are heavy metal fans.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that.
And
yeah.
They'll actually still buy physical.
Right, and they're still keeping that alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And which is why we got, you know, big tours selling out. Mm-hmm. And, like, you guys, like, putting out, I'm not poo-pooing anything, but, like, the ability to put this out and sell it out.
Yeah.
It's because of, like, metal fans on the internet are the only ones still keeping physical, digital, and digital media alive, like actual purchases.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite parts of metal.
Yeah.
I think that there's an element to it that feels like it's niche enough to feel like if you're an outsider, it feels like you have a special little group of people, right?
Right.
But then it's also accepting enough of people that it's pretty widespread, and there's a lot out there. There's a lot to pull from. There's a lot of bands from a lot of small towns and things like that. And it's just what it's able to do for people in terms of, like, channeling their frustrations and aggressions and all that kind of stuff. Like, not many types of music really do that. I mean, I know there's lots of music that can kind of help you get through a hard time or whatever, but there's something that goes a little deeper than that in metal. And then there's, like, every branch of metal that you could imagine. There's, like,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, philosophical stuff. And then there's, you know, Gojira, who's talking about, like, you know, be kind to the earth and stuff. You know,
there's party thrash about getting messed up.
Exactly. there's some kind of metal for everyone. And so I think that's awesome. But I think that it kind of plays both of those fields of, like, it's good for outsiders, and a lot of people feel like outsiders, you know. And then it's also broad. Like, there's enough of it there. It's not so niche that it's like this sub genre.
Right.
You know.
And that's one of the things about the internet. Like, you're involved with so many other people, but it's like focusing on the people that are, like, have always felt a little different.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And those are the people who are buying albums, spending their money on records.
Yeah, they care a lot about it, for sure. I mean, I think that music in general can really define someone unlike anything else. Obviously, a lot of people kind of, they base their entire lifestyle on their musical interests and stuff like that. And those subcultures and countercultures are super important to someone's identity. And so I think that really is one of the driving forces of people really investing in something like metal, buying the shirts, buying the merch, buying the CDs, going to the shows, starting a zine, whatever it is. It's they feel like an investment into that as part of their identity. And
absolutely,
like, you cannot get more important than being responsible for someone's identity.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how, like, things come and go, resurgences come. I really honestly think heavy metal music is poised to take back over the music industry at some point very soon. Here,
I think there it goes in waves, but I agree that there are times when it just feels like high time for heavy metal, right. And I think it will.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of that kind of trends with the economy as well, right? So, like, when hair metal went out and, like, grunge came in, like,
everyone's like, yeah, party, stock market's up, it's all long hair.
And then they're like, ah, oh, depression, drugs,
these pissed off people that hate themselves and everybody else in Seattle.
Like, I hate myself too.
Yeah, I'm into that too. So yeah, I think to what you're saying, like, yeah, within the next couple of years, I think a lot of the, you know, kind of top 40 bubblegum, it's all good and fun. Like something's going to come in that kind of like,
yeah, because all of that stuff kind of exemplifies in like perfectly what's happening in the world today. Like you look at the poppiest bubblegum stuff that's happening in music, and it just like mirrors social media, and it mirrors like all the gross stuff that's happening in the world. And metal will almost always be like the opponent to all of that sort of stuff.
But seriously though, check these out.
I think in that way, like any time that there's a backlash in something, I think that metal has like its day, right?
I mean, so in 2017, the only platinum record and that went platinum, can you guess who it was? And it was in December, at the end of the year, it took all year.
2017?
2017, maybe 2016.
Okay.
It was Taylor Swift.
All right.
Was the only artist who went platinum.
It's pretty metal.
But you also have bands like Metallica selling out gigantic stadiums, but they're bringing bands like Gojira on tour.
Yeah, Ghost and stuff.
Yeah, and you know, coming back to your point, one of the statistics that I heard that kind of blew my mind was Iron Maiden has more streaming plays than Madonna.
Yeah.
Wow.
Over and over. Madonna, right? You would have, without hearing that, you'd go, yeah, Like a Virgin for sure has more plays than
Iron Maiden. Well, just by virtue of like clubs and stuff. Like how many clubs are playing Iron Maiden, you know, like versus Madonna. So.
Yeah. Iron Maiden across the board gets.
I'll tell you one thing. Madonna definitely doesn't fly herself in a 747 to shows.
Damn straight. Bruce Dickinson power, man. All right, guys. You guys are in the Northwest here. You guys live in Maple Valley area. What are your favorite Northwest bands of all time? One of the last questions here. We got two more questions for you guys. Favorite Northwest band of all time?
Yeah, I mean, I got to play Homer. I grew up, you know, during the 90s in Seattle. And so, like, you know, it's too easy to be like Nirvana, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, like all that stuff. Alice in Chains, for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's almost too easy, but like legitimately, that was the
sometimes
world.
It's the best.
The
answer
world
the
that
easy
I was
one.
Raised in, and you know, getting to go to like the Rock Candy and see, you know, Alice in Chains play and stuff.
I can
like that.
Tell by the beard.
Like, yeah.
Well, the question is, would you be the same person without those bands?
No,
probably.
Hell definitely no. Not. Absolutely not. You know, I don't even know what I'd be without it, but.
What about you, Ryan?
Old one would be Alice in Chains. That was one of the first, you know, Dirt was hugely inspirational for sure. And that was one of those records that was kind of at those formative years when I was getting into music and learning how to play and stuff like that. And so Alice in Chains for sure. And I've had the pleasure of getting to know those guys, and I've actually designed the last two Alice in Chains records, which has been like, you know, tell my 15-year-old self that is insane.
Yo, what's up, Kent? You can do stuff.
You designed Rainier Fog?
Rainier Fog and awesome. Devil Put Dinosaurs here.
Wow.
Dude, I did not know that. I didn't know that.
So that would be the oldie. Newer would be Black Breath.
Yes. For hell sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Amen. The most underrated, or were the most underrated thing.
They need to come back, man. Jamie got hit by that car, man.
Crazy.
That's another conversation for another day.
Well, speaking of getting hit by a car, we got a question for you guys before we get out of here. Last question. Pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it.
And show us if you can. If you don't have to take off.
Okay.
I got soft hands, man. I don't got a lot of scars.
Yeah, I've got
John's got scars.
Scar in your psyche, man. Well, are you circumcised? I mean,
let me tell you about it.
Wait till we get off the air and we'll figure it out. My beard covers it up, but I'll dig through it and show it to you. So the worst injury, I've had a lot of injuries, but the worst one I ever had was I was taking a like ER course.
Okay.
At, thinking I was going to be like an ER medic or whatever.
Sure.
And I had finals week, and it was I had the flu and I was super sick, but I had to go to school to do the finals and all these kind of things.
Yeah.
And so we had finished the final in that class, and so they were just showing us like a ER training video that was like just grueling accidents and arriving on the scene.
It's like, this is what you need to get ready for.
And I can still vividly remember there was a guy that had cut his fingertips off with a chainsaw.
Ooh,
and
Jesus.
Had like a work glove on.
Ooh.
And it's like
blood squirting.
Yeah, and it's like handheld camera showing up at the site, and I was sitting there and I was like, oh, I'm sick. And so it's like, I'm going to throw up. So I asked the teacher, I was like, can I go out and just get ready for my next class? I'm not feeling good. He's like, yeah, go ahead. So I go outside, and there's like, it was in a portable, so there's like the wheelchair ramp, you know, up, and it's on cement pad. So I was just standing up there and just blacked out, and I fell through the railing didn't put my hands out or anything because I was blacked out.
Yeah.
So I landed on my chin and split my chin wide open.
Oh, Jesus.
I bit off a quarter of my tongue. I broke my nose and broke my jaw on both sides.
So you smacked your head right off.
Yes, just face first. Scorpioned off that thing
right before graduation.
Yeah, and so I woke up like in a pool of blood, and the guy that was teaching the ER class came running over and like flipped me over.
Well, that's
like,
what do I do?
You're in the right place. At least.
So I'm, you know, in this crazy shock, and like I can't control my speech or anything. Like I can't move. So he's kind of feeling around. And he's asking me to try to respond to things, and I can't. And so he looks over to a kid and goes, "He broke his neck. Call 911." And so
You heard that.
God damn it. I'm paralyzed. Like, I broke my, and I'm losing my mind. And so, yeah, that was a fun one. There's a longer version of that.
Damn,
but
that's
a good story, though. I had my jaw wired shut for 4 months. But here I am today to live the tell.
That's a good story.
And you're a handsome, fine, handsome.
Yeah, grow out the beard so nobody sees the chewed up face.
All right, Ryan. Okay. Now you gotta follow that
okay,
one.
Okay, I was thinking while he was talking, I think I got one. I don't have any like cool hurt myself scars like that, but I have a lot of tattoos.
Sure.
And some of which scarred worse than others. Me and some friends like to do a game called Tattoo Roulette, where we draw a little wheel of options for tattoos, and then you kind of set it on the ground and you flip a quarter, and wherever the quarter lands, you get. And you put anything on there from like the, you know, ICP Hatchet Man logo
Tasmanian Devil smoking a dude.
People hearing this are like, yeah.
Probably some.
What's the bad tattoo?
You just put like the stuff that just no one wants on them. Yeah.
Steelers logo.
It's friends.
Too far.
Friend, none of us are actual tattoo artists. Someone just, you know, one of our friends just has a machine.
Oh, no.
And so I've tattooed all kinds of crazy stuff on my friends. And one of mine that scarred the worst, speaking of scars, is I have Bart Simpson on my leg saying, "Eat my shorts."
You got it?
By a non-professional tattoo
artist. Pull that thing out of there.
Let's see if I can get
to it. Pull that tattoo out of
there. You might have to go pants down, not pants up. Oh, there we go.
Oh, wow.
So he's scarred pretty good, and some of the letters fell out.
That's some stick and poke right there.
It looks like it, but yeah.
He says, "What's up, dude?"
He says, "Eat my shorts."
Eat my shorts.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You can't even read it.
Tell.
Show off the other side.
Did it come with free staff infection?
So there's that one, and then there's Mr. Cool Ice over here.
Wow.
Mr. Cool Ice.
Which, yes. Just type that into Google, and then you'll get the joke.
Oh, we know Mr. Cool Ice.
Oh, we know.
So Mr. Cool Ice here, and then
Here's another.
Yeah, it's got some years on it.
West Coast with the West Side.
With the West Coast hand. That was the first one I got.
Wow.
So, Tattoo Roulette. Play that at home with your friends.
Yep.
So, kids, if you're trying to be in a band,
mm-hmm.
Here's what you need to do.
Get a tattoo gun.
Good times. All right. Well,
hey,
sweet.
So,
how do you get from there?
Yeah, where do you go from there? Where do you go from there?
I guess we'll just play one last song.
There you go.
So, Ryan, John, thank you from Demon Hunter. In case you're just tuning in, if you're at work, and people who are hearing this are like, tuned in halfway through, and they're like, "What the hell are you guys talking about?
Who is this?" It's Demon Hunter, man, and they got two brand new albums, War and Peace, on Solid State Records, available now. Released yesterday.
Yeah,
very cool. So you guys gonna be playing Northwest anytime in the next couple years? Maybe the next year.
Yeah, I'd say like probably. You know, I think we're getting the gears in motion for summer, so we're looking towards that right now.
Awesome.
I think we're gonna do a couple of little runs, so look forward to it.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Well, we will hopefully be one of the first to know, and we'll let everyone know, and we can
absolutely
all party and hang out and drink some beers and watch some Demon
Hunters. Let's do it. Hey, any last words for the people who are listening? Young, old, middle?
Thanks for sticking. I mean, like you said, we've been doing this for a minute, so thanks to everyone who's been with us for so long and, you know, has stayed true and followed us and loves what we do still today. And that's, you know, the whole reason we can do this is because people still care about it. So I just appreciate all the fanship and all the everything that our fans, you know, fuel us with over the last almost 20 years.
I just want to say long live Kent, Renton, and Maple Valley.
Nice. Yeah. The South End?
Yeah.
Right on. This song is called More Than Bones. It comes from the other album that you released just yesterday called Peace. What do you want to say about More Than Bones before we jump into it?
More Than Bones is basically about how, you know, it's something that we kind of forget about sometimes, but there was a lot of musicians that have kind of passed in the last couple of years. You know, you got Cornell and Bowie and Prince, and it just kind of started, yeah, it just started piling up. And, you know, I thought that as sad as that is, it's sweet that we have recorded music from these people that will live for generations and generations.
Yes.
And so the concept of the song is that, you know, when I leave you more than bones. I leave you like all this heart and soul on, you know, awesome. Throughout the music. So that's kind of the sentiment behind that song.
That's awesome. Right on. Here's More Than Bones. It's Demon Hunter. Pick up these albums, and we'll let you know when they're going to be playing in town. But for now, let's just delve right into these records.
And thank you again, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, guys. Anytime.
It's Demon Hunter on Metal Shop.
Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.